Breaking the Panel is made possible by you and other listeners just as awesome as you are. If you want to support the show and get a little something in return, just go to patreon.com/breakingthepanel, because we do appreciate the help.
Because I learned something earlier today, that hyperbole is not hyperbole in Australia. It is hyperball, and I think that's ridiculous, Frank.
Dude!
That makes sense to me.
That's like my favorite sport now.
Hyperball.
These days, the comic book owns pop culture. You'll find it all in the panel of your favorite comic book. Us, we're living the comic's life. We're breaking the panel.
Welcome to Breaking the Panel, where we hit all the hot news of the day and the opinions and the things going on in society. Today, we've got a lot of interesting things going on. We got some hot new news to talk about. We've got some bad stuff going on that may bring some soapboxes and some Casey's to the table and see what happens there. And we've got some other things to deal with. But before that, let me do some introductions on the Rock Gotta Podcasting. Charles McFall, the awesome carnage of maximum carnage of our show, Paul Klotz.
Oh, yeah. I kill all the things. Yeah.
The BVS Superman of our show, Chris Wisdom.
Oh, God.
Hey.
I'm excited for what's coming next.
The number one fan of Submariner in the world, Casey Strohs.
Imperious Rex!
No, that's a total lie.
You just, I saw so much hate for Submariner, man, to the point that you'd rather watch a Carnage film than Submariner.
I don't know. That might be a little bit of hyperbole. I know I just said it, but yeah. I really, really do hate this.
It's funny because I don't know that I've come across somebody who's so happy about comics in the world that hates something so vehemently. You'll have a smile on your face like, I hate Carnage. And you're not like angry and wanting to stab somebody, but you hate Carnage. Funny.
I mean, it's just, listen, there's like a difference between how terrible these characters are. Carnage is terrible because he's got basically no depth. The Submariner is terrible because he keeps trying to bang another guy's wife and he can't decide if he's a good guy or a bad guy. But when he's a good guy, the heroes all give him a pass for flooding New York, not once, not twice, but three times, and also causing a genocide in Wakanda. So I don't get it.
Fair.
I don't know why they hang out with this guy.
On Facebook, it's complicated.
Nicely put, Chris. Now, I do want to address something with Chris Wisdom before we get started. We've talked about he's leaving the show, not permanently, but he's got life things going on in 2018, and it's taking him away for a little while. He's also a full partner in the network. And Klotz and I were talking about it, and I was realizing myself the last couple of shows, I knew I just had to tackle it head on and talk about it, then I'd stop doing it. But I've been making little off jokes about basically Chris isn't dedicated, right? Who's going to be here after 2018 and this and that and the other. And it's because it bothers me. It does. It bothers me that he has to go away and that he has to do what he has to do. And we're going to miss him. We're going to miss him a lot. So I just wanted to tackle that head on and get it out there so I could quit worrying about it and quit bothering, you know, it's still going to bother me, but I'm not going to stifle it and worry about it. I'm just going to quit making crappy jokes at his expense. So there you go. Jumping right into the news. Thanks to Chris Klotz and Casey for bringing all the headlines tonight, because I've been slammed this week. Who brought this first one? I read the article today, but who brought the article about Marvel's editor-in-chief?
That was me. So Marvel Comics editor-in-chief Axel Alonso is out following a lot of creative shakeup over at Marvel. So they lost Bendis, their top writer dog, for almost 20 years, and they have ousted their old EIC, and now they have C.B. Cebulski, who for a long time I knew him as, I guess, a talent manager. Like, he would be the guy that reviews portfolios and stuff at conventions for people like interested in hanging out at the Marvel books, or, you know, like submitting and working for them. But they moved him over to Asia for a while, and he was doing like international management and stuff for Marvel and like promotion overseas. And now they're bringing him back into the fold, and he's taking over the role of editor in chief, I believe, as of 2018, or at least all the books that all the current crossovers and current story tracks or whatnot resolve up. I think he's an interesting choice. He's definitely a man who loves comics. But on the flip side, he has undergone some interesting controversy himself lately, where he he wrote comics under a pseudonym, an Asian pseudonym of Akira Yoshida, which is really not a great thing to do. But thoughts, gentlemen?
I don't understand.
It's a lot. I know.
No, it's a pseudonym. It's a pseudonym. And from what I saw, people are saying, well, he wrote some Wolverine stories that all seem to be centered around Japan and samurai.
A lot of his stuff was Japanese charged.
Okay, but I guess my problem is most times whenever Wolverine is written in Japan, there's a lot of ninja samurai and honor. So where did he overstep? Is it just because they do it flat out as, oh, we're white people and we don't really know what we're talking about. We're just being stereotypical. And this is a problem because he used a pseudonym like writers have been doing since the dawn of writing.
Well, there's more to that, too. When
I get the back end to try and write because he wanted to write and that portion of the company wasn't allowed to write.
And we can talk about that. But I think what Casey was getting at, or what I thought more to it, is the article I read said that there were interviews done as Akira talking about growing up in Japan. And
he posed as a Japanese, American.
Right. I get that, but again, how often did Stephen King do interviews as Richard Bachman?
White writer.
Nobody knew what Bachman looked like.
Isn't there a fake picture of him on the inside of the book? I mean, I was under the impression that they...
I didn't think there was. I could be wrong.
It's actually Rick from Rick and Morty. Yeah.
No, generally when somebody writes under a pseudonym, there's no pictures or anything.
But okay, so
that's the other thing, because I did see the same kind of thing. Now, I'm not supporting people pretending to be Japanese or anything that they're not. I'm a little bit with Chris. I'm a little bit with it's kind of screwy that he did this. And I can understand why people would be.
He ultimately did it to skirt around Marvel's policy at the time where you couldn't be a writer and an editor on their books. Just to make that clear for those of you who haven't read or haven't heard anything about
apparently, why. I read one article that mentioned that he did live in Japan for over a year and he's familiar with the culture and all that. But, I mean, there's a whole conversation about, that whole thing. I don't have the energy to get into it tonight. it's a complicated issue. A lot of people have one perspective on what a white person can do in regards to, ethnic culture.
Would you call it race appropriation?
Absolutely.
I wouldn't do it any more than I would call it any.
He literally posed as a person of another race.
Yeah, but he didn't do anything outside of what white writers have been doing for other cultures all this time. So unless we're fully prepared to sit down and say every writer that has ever written Wolverine and done a story that takes place in Japan is a cultural appropriation, it's not fair to just blanketly do this to this guy just because he chose a pseudonym and as a writer.
But he marketed himself as an Asian American.
He chose a background. He did backstory. He was doing what writers do. He developed a character and played that character. How many characters have been developed by white writers that are not white characters?
I mean, I guess that's fair, but it just still seems weird.
I have more problems skirting around the editorial writing issue than that. Just because I guess I'm coming from it as he's a fiction writer and he was playing a part. And he was doing fiction. And I guess I don't know what a fiction writer is supposed to do if you're going to nail him for writing fiction and performing fiction.
So to jump in there, I think it's okay to be like, you shouldn't have done this and you shouldn't do this as an example to other people. Like, don't pretend to be an ethnicity that you're not. If you're going to write under a pseudonym, just have it. The pseudonym can be ambiguous. You know what I mean? Because that happens a lot. There's a lot of names out there. J.K. Rowling, I believe, wrote under a pseudonym that was assumed to be a man for a while. Mm-hmm. Stuff like that. I'm fine with that. I get why people are upset that he went for a very obvious, And the thing is, the argument can be made that there's a whole, you can drum up a whole lot of business or you can get projects you might not get otherwise by implying that you're something that you're not. And that is kind of messed up. However, this was years ago. This is an important context. This was years ago, earlier in his career. He only did it for less than a year. I think he realized how wrong it was. You know what I mean? He went directly to Marvel. By every article I've read, it said he went to Marvel and was like, listen, I did this and I did this to get around the things. And so as far as I can tell, he owned up to it. So what I don't support is this insane outrage that people are some people are calling for him to be ousted.
Already.
Yeah.
The news broke on his first day.
Yeah.
after the announcement, which just could not have been worse timing for this guy.
So I think like the best course of action for everybody involved is to acknowledge that this was a dumb move and shouldn't have been done. But at the same time, yeah, I'm with you, Chris. I'm not willing to get behind the fact that like a white writer can't write any ethnicity like that, because that seems to be a narrative that's being pushed, or like an idea that's being pushed, that like white people can't write about other races or ethnicities or whatever anymore. Well, and that's
been in the narrative for probably close to the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Between female characters and ethnicities. And especially when you're talking Wolverine, like Silver Samurai was not developed by an Asian American. It was Steve Gerber and Bob Brown, Mariko Yoshida, Chris Claremont, and John Byrne.
Yeah.
So it's fiction writers doing fiction stuff.
Right.
I'm not giving him a wholesale pass either, but like there are legitimate gripes to be had in the industry right now. And to me, this is so low on the priority list.
Yeah. I mean, as far as like addressing issues in the industry, yeah. I think this is a don't do what this guy did.
It's being blown out of proportion for sure.
Yeah. My question is, were the books he written good? Critically, received, whatever. Were they good or were they horrible?
Without hindsight, like how were they received? I don't know, well, about your personal opinion.
Received, I'm not sure, but I know out of the stuff I've read, I have not really been
okay. So compared to
his work, like it's been fine, but it's nothing where I'm like, oh man, you really got to read this.
Is it culturally insensitive? Was there, because like Charlie Chan, right? Charlie Chan
was a white guy with no matter what.
Yeah. I mean, you've been talking about the Mandarin with his white man artistry with a Fu Manchu, you know, facial hair. It's like, that's bad, but that's what the 70s were, you know, type of deal. We would never do that today, right? So that was my first question when I read the article was, I see where some people are coming from. And when they start talking about, well, honor can mean, I saw some little clip. I was like, you're an idiot. But like, well, apparently he wrote honor in this thing and it can mean bread or it can mean this. Or I mean, they're being stupid and calling him racist. I'm like, well, I think you might be going too far with the racist thing. I think he was just trying to.
Well, yeah, that's ahead. Is something I don't agree with at all. Like saying that somebody's racist because they tried to write some insight into another culture that's not their own. If anything, what he's guilty of is being a little too passionate about that culture and misrepresenting himself and possibly that culture.
He's a supreme weeaboo.
It is what it is. But a little bit of like context on the flip side, since he chose a Japanese name, if we look at Japanese comics, manga, and we look at Japanese animation based on that, they characterize Western cultures all the time. Like, I mean, there's a lot of like arguably offensive, but I don't think they mean for them to be offensive caricatures of like African Americans and, you know, just white people in general in a lot of anime and manga. It's commonplace. Like they have foreign characters all the time. You know, one of the most popular shonen anime of all time, Bleach, has a bunch of very culturally anchored characters, is the way I'm going to put that. There's a culture of give and take. Now, one comment I did see in the comments under one of the articles was somebody said, has anybody talked to the good people of Japan and seen what they have to say about this? And I think that's somewhat relevant.
Yeah.
Though there is a little bit of, we've talked about this in the past with the Ghost in the Shell thing. There's a little bit of cultural context that the Japanese people they're not inclined to be hyper negative publicly. You know, they tend to be just supportive or positive of things. And generally the attitude I've seen out of many Japanese people is that they're happy to see the West take interest in their culture, as long as it's fairly represented. So I think the notion that he's racist for writing Japanese stories and when he has some experience with the culture is a little bit erroneous. And I'm sure some people out there listening are probably going to disagree with that, but it is what it is. I definitely think it was a dumb move, though, but it's a complicated issue. I think we should just like let the guy do his job, though, and move forward and see.
Yeah, I think Marvel is in dire need of a bold new direction, so I'm willing to give him a fair shake.
I'm trying to tread as lightly as I can here because I realize what I'm about to say, but I do think we have to have some perspective on what's going on because he admitted it, right? He went to Marvel, he admitted whatever work he did, whatever got him to the position he's in now, theoretically he's earned it. And here's the sensitive part. because you could easily argue, well, it doesn't matter how long it goes. It's not the same as he locked himself in a room with somebody and was a sexual predator, right? That's an always never should happen kind of thing. It's not the same as he was actually racist and told horrible racist jokes behind the scenes and then pretended to be that race and do this. I just think as an American pastime, people say football's the number one pastime. Some people say baseball. I really think it's finding offense in things and then fighting about it is our pastime.
Yeah, at least and recently it is.
I think the level, yeah, I agree with you about that. But the level of what this is, I think Clatchy summed it up. We can all admit it was a dumb thing. He even seems to have admitted it was a dumb thing to do. And he stopped it on his own volition. He didn't get caught. He stopped it on his own volition. How much damage has he done? And that's an honest question to ask, but that's for Marvel to ask. And that's for the, honestly, that's for the Japanese culture to respond back to. Like, similarly, the Muslim incident with the 212 and that artist who put it in the X-Men comics and the graffiti.
Oh, X-Men Gold.
Yeah. That's right. And yeah. The people who were actually dealing with that situation, and I believe it was in India, rose up to Marvel and said, no, this is no. Just no.
It's not okay.
And that was theirs to do, because honestly, in that situation, we didn't know what the problem would have been as Americans, you know? So yeah. I think we should kind of let offense lie. And I mean, I agree that it was dumb.
Well, yeah.
But
I'm not saying this in regards to like sexual assault or anything like that.
I know you're not.
What point do we hold every person accountable for everything that they did 10, 15, 20 years ago? That's objectionable to us, like within reason. Like, this was a dumb move. He didn't kill somebody. He didn't assault somebody, as far as we know. He isn't harassing people, as far as we know. There's a point where it's like, all right, he owned up to it. Neither he nor Marvel are trying to hide it. They admit it. They still chose him for the job, which tells you that he must be qualified. I expect Marvel to be able to put people in the EIC seat that are qualified. You know what I mean? It's fine to raise awareness, like, hey, people don't do this, but like, let's put the torches and pitchforks down. If he does something that sets off everybody's alarms in the future, by all means, then let's, you know what I mean? But as far as we know, this is just a guy who made a stupid mistake in his past when he was trying to cut his teeth in the industry. And I think a lot of people are probably guilty of that on some level.
I agree. Now, there's a link here to Quesada's comments. Do we want to deal with that?
Well, his was about just him being editor-in-chief, which, okay. I mean, he hasn't... No one at Marvel has responded to the whole pseudonym thing except for, I think, one of the people over at Marvel Asia. I forget her name. But it was like sort of a half justification. Yeah, Marvel editor and head of character development, Sana Aminat, came to Cebulski's defense. She did an interview with Channel News Asia, and she kind of like backed him up by saying like, it's not culturally insensitive because like he understands the culture. It was just not like, it's not what people would have wanted to hear in response to this. So it was.
I think as Charles was saying, the people who are looking to be offended are going to be offended regardless. Like there's no resolution of this where they're going to back down and not be upset about it. I just, hopefully everybody out there, like if you're an up and comer or something, you've learned something from this, like don't pretend to be something that you're not. If you're writing under a pseudonym, make it ambiguous or you know what I mean? Like it is what it is, but like Akira Yoshida is a very Japanese name. There's no, you can't even pretend it's anything but Japanese.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the thing. Don't do stuff like that.
These are your comics on drugs, kids. Stay off drugs.
That's Cebulski. Bad.
Is the problem the pseudonym or is the problem the character that he created and played?
It's the character he created. It's the whole thing. People are taking, an upheaval with it because of alleged cultural appropriation.
Okay, so then men have used female pseudonyms, and females have used, as we've already talked about, J.K. Rowling being one of the most prominent, females have used male pseudonyms. So is that more or less egregious?
Different.
It's
parallel, but different. Okay, I mean, well, because in the context...
In this day and age of equality among sexes and it being a hot button...
Are they using the fact that they're a woman to promote their work and gain, you know,
I'm not in those editorial meetings and publishing.
Right. Meetings. But if that's the case, then yes, it's wrong. But it's, you know.
Well, women have used male pseudonyms to get published in categories that they wouldn't normally be published in. You know, so like a J.K. Rowling, a woman generally probably doesn't have much of an issue getting a young adult novel.
Absolutely,
published.
Yeah, no, and I grant you absolutely. Like in J.K.'s instance, like it's well documented that the reason that she did so was to get her foot in the door because people were not reading her
well,
stuff.
She also did it after Harry Potter, if I recall, to try to see if her work would get picked up without her name.
Without her name. Yeah.
Right, but I thought that when she was publishing. Or when she was trying to get Harry Potter published, she ran into issues and had tried using a male name at one point, too.
Oh, that might be the case. They would be separate instances then.
Yeah.
I believe, was it Stephen King's son also did something like this, where he wrote under a pseudonym so that people wouldn't pick up on his name?
Well, Joe Hill that's the name that he writes under for that exact reason.
Right, so people don't just, you know, pick it up because it's a King family.
And I think that was the initial reasoning with Stephen King and going to Bachman.
Yeah, but so with Cebulski's case, it would be okay for him to be like CB Strohs or whatever, you know what I mean?
CB Radio.
Right under a pseudonym, but he chose one that was very specifically Japanese. And in the context of the whole world, the Japanese people is a relatively small, you know what I mean? It's a very mm-hmm. small, very specific culture. It's one of those things. And so like part of the idea of where some of the offense is taken, and it is valid to a point, is that like at that time people were looking for more representation from Asia, for example. There's also the crossover appeal of a Japanese writer writing in, you know, the Western format, which is a big deal. You know, because it's easy for, well, I don't know how easy it is for a Japanese writer to get into manga, for example. But like a Westerner couldn't write manga in Japanese or in Japan, generally.
Right. Well, so it wouldn't be allowed. This was when he was an editor at Marvel Proper US or when he was overseas in the Asian market?
I believe when he did it initially, he had lived overseas at the time, but
he was living in the West and writing and editing for Marvel Comics.
Yeah,
right. This was when he was editing in the West, because I guess the way I read it, I thought he had done this while he was in Asia.
No, I don't think so. And the thing is, one of the things that got pulled out is the cover up stuff, like the fact that people at Marvel said that they had interviewed him. You know, Akira Yoshida.
Yeah, they all
had seen him. Yeah, some of them had said they've seen him at conventions and stuff, and they had lunch with him and stuff, and, which is true.
Yeah, they never just clarified that statement, yeah.
Right, but they never, yeah, the obvious implication was that everybody was looking for this Japanese man, and it was a white man, you know what I mean, who was living his day-to-day life under his normal name, you know, and was in Marvel proper, which is that's a whole other can of worms, too. Like, you know, their barrier between people who work for them and who can write for them and all that stuff, and, you know, all of that is a whole different issue that has come up before in the past. I mean, Peter David talked about it. You know what I mean?
Right. The reason I was asking, because I would think that there would be a problem if he had used an American pseudonym while he was an editor in Asia and submitted.
Oh, just layers upon layers.
Right. Because then he would have been in the Asian market submitting these treatments to the Asian market and then getting picked up as an American writer when you're supposed to be your talent pool is supposed to be in the Asian market. How many more problems would that have created?
I think they would.
I agree 100%. Like him circumventing the rules, that's a problem. That to me is the more egregious error, because that shows a lack of integrity. Like he could have shopped out to the smaller and other publishers if he wanted.
Well,
more.
He did that as well.
Right.
I mean, he was writing for other publishers under this pseudonym. That's actually how he got the Marvel gig, from what I understand.
That's how everybody gets a gig at Marvel. You start on one of the smaller indies, yeah, and then you work your way to the big two.
Well, I mean, how many years has it been since you could just submit straight to?
Right.
Isn't a thing anymore. So.
Yeah, I say we give him a fair shake. We look past this previous indiscretion, and then we see how it goes.
Just make sure, Casey, you keep an eye on him. You keep him straight, and we'll trust you to handle
you
that.
You know me. I have nothing but words for Marvel editorial.
This seems like a Chris type of thing. The DC.
No, this one's Casey.
It's also me.
Wow. All right. What's up with the Doomsday Clock?
I doubled down. So you guys have all read Watchmen, right?
Yeah. Yes. It's been a while, but yes.
Did any of you pick up or read the first issue of Doomsday Clock coming out of DC last week?
I did.
Nope.
All right.
Nope. Moving on.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I wanted to let you get your giggles in. So it's a bit of an interesting story. As a people have a lot of gripes with follow-ups to Watchmen, especially a couple of years ago when they did all those before Watchmen stories, which were actually pretty good because they got a real all-star kind of group of artists and writers to do sort of a series of interconnected prequels, like a Minutemen one and a Comedian one and Silk Spectre and Night Owl, things like that, to lead into, you know, this now 30-year-old comic book story that a lot of people are like, they think is maybe the greatest comic book ever published, the best deconstruction of superheroes that we've maybe ever seen in comic books. But now with the DC Rebirth, DC is merging the two. They're crossing them over, as far as solicitations would imply. But this is a true blue sequel to Watchmen. It takes place in 1992. Ozymandias's plot, you know, to save the world with a wacky alien bomb thing to, you know, stop the Cold War has failed. He was elected president for a time. There's a lot of things, a lot of details rolling in here. There's a new Rorschach moving around. As a whole, I'm interested to see where the direction goes, although I'm worried that it's also a 12-issue series, and with the way comics are decompressed these days, there's just going to be a lot of unnecessary fluff trapped in here, and I'm really worried that it'll tarnish the legacy of the original series, which is something I don't generally have an objection to with most other books, but I have some weird reverence for the story existing on its own. But yeah, Chris, anything?
I like Watchmen. I like it a lot. When you talk about the deconstruction of superheroes, you are absolutely correct. There's no finer example of the work being done.
It's the pinnacle.
The problem with the Watchmen is it set us in this direction that we find ourselves, where you have people like Zack Snyder who think that they're deconstructing heroes, and then will get so full of themselves that they'll say, "I guess people don't like their heroes deconstructed."
And you're making it worse.
And that's not the problem of wanting superheroes deconstructed, because the Watchmen did not deconstruct Superman. They didn't deconstruct Batman. They took the superhero genre, and they deconstructed that. Because there's not necessarily anything about specific characters that need to be deconstructed all the time. Like a character as noteworthy and recognizable as Batman or Superman or Spider-Man don't necessarily need to be deconstructed. Reinvention is not not always bad. Adaptation is not always bad. But there is nothing that requires those heroes with, you know, 50, 60, 70 years of lore to be broken down to their bare elements and built back up into however it is that you see it that has no resemblance to what it was before. If that's what you want to do, that's fine, but don't call it those superheroes. Make something else. And if you want to be very heavy-handed in you saying, well, this is supposed to be my version of, all for it. Hang a lantern on it all you want, but don't call it those heroes, because that's not what you're giving people when you do that. For this, I think this is bridging that gap between... I feel like this is doing a good job of bridging that gap between not only the Watchmen and DC Rebirth, but also those different stages that we found ourselves going through, especially New 52. Because what we've learned through Rebirth is that the New 52 Superman went away.
And he straight up died in regular Superman's arms.
Yep. And then there was a merging somehow of the timelines, because this death. So in the last few panels of the book, the last couple pages, it's Superman having a nightmare of the night that John and Martha Kent died.
Which still bothers me, because I'm so used to seeing them alive in most continuities.
And that's why this is interesting, because that is New 52's origin. That is not the Superman that we were left with after Rebirth.
Right.
So Dr. Manhattan or somebody is still playing games, or we didn't get what we thought we got in Rebirth. Like, you can't, like, I walking away from this story and I don't know what direction it's going. on top of, yes, where it takes place on the, in the Watchmen universe in 1992, like it's a straight up sequel, there's still a vast time jump if you look at time linearly and not the way it interacts with time and space and how whatever manipulation Dr. Manhattan has, because in DC Comics, it ain't 1992.
That's true.
So,
and God help us if it were.
Yeah. So, I mean, to me, there's plenty of stuff left to see in this. I mean, we get the revelation about this Rorschach that we have.
He's black.
Yeah. It's there's, I think there's a lot in here that's, to me, screams Geoff Johns doing great Geoff Johns things. I know from what Casey has intimated in a few conversations that he is not as fully behind Geoff Johns.
Johns is a mixed bag. You know, his Green Lantern stuff is for the most part some of the most top-notch thing, and Flash, you know. His Brave and the Bold, if you will, is really the top of what he's done, but you know,
you don't give him credit for Rebirth. And I'm not talking Green Lantern and Flash. I'm talking DC Rebirth.
I think Rebirth is fine, but I was burned too heavily when he did the New 52. I mean, you know, six of one, half a dozen of the other, really. You know, for as good as Rebirth is, you know, he's also the forefront behind New 52 and Brightest Day, which was also super not great and kind of unravel.
Brightest Day,
That's him, man.
You can't shirk it. But that's not that. Was that Geoff Johns saying, "Okay, Blackest Night was awesome, and now we need to do a New 52, we need to do a Brightest Day and continue the storyline"? Or do you think that had a lot to do with Dan and the publishing house saying, "Hey, man, that paid off really well. Let's do it again"?
Yeah, you know, I guess you know and, you could you could blame the editors a lot on that one too, but still,
New 52 is the same way. They thought they had a direction. They thought they saw the direction that the comics needed to go. They went all in. They said, okay, well, these are the parameters. These are the rules for this new universe. Go play. And all of the writers did what they could with the parameters they were given. And I mean, Superman, a lot of my problems with Superman is it read like John Peters dictated things. You know, if you're given a set of rules that you have to ignore the last, you know, especially where Superman's concerned, if you have to ignore everything from the Man of Steel miniseries since John Byrne rebooted and since Crisis on Infinite Earths, then you have to ignore all of that, and then these are your parameters.
Well, Chris, if it's good enough for our justice system, why is it not good enough for comic books?
But you know, I may have mixed feelings about this story existing in general, but I am on board, and I'm definitely interested to see where it goes, especially since it's been a long time coming. It's been like, what, a year and a half since Rebirth, it feels like.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's almost 2 years.
Almost two. Yeah. I know there's at least like 18 or 20 issues of most series out that got renumbered with one, like Wonder Woman. But yeah, I want to give this a shot. As far as speculation goes, you know, I told this to Travis Jones of the Blazing Defender Report, that new Rorschach is going to be the kid reading comic books from, you know, next to the newsstand who was reading the Tales of the Black Freighter.
Yeah,
I know you might think, oh, that kid totally got obliterated in what appeared to be some kind of psychic explosion, but not everybody in New York died from that, so we'll see. But that's all I've got to say about that. I feel like it didn't get enough big news than I thought it would. Like, I expected more people to be going nuts that not only does this thing exist now, but had been in the works for a while and is, you know, it's finally hit the shelves. But I didn't see a lot of push about it. So
yeah, especially with midnight releases in a lot of places. I mean, it was big news. I don't know. I have mixed feelings about Watchmen because we can never examine Watchmen as Watchmen. We have to take Watchmen and say, how can this influence the entire comic book industry and turn it into this dour, grim place? Because that's the only way heroes are allowed to exist now, is murderers or psychopaths or daddy issues or this, that, and the other. Because that's all.
It's a rough time in the world of comics.
It's kind of why I have not yet given Riverdale a chance. I know Charles talked pretty highly about it, and I've heard good things about it. But I'm like, that's exactly what I'm talking about. Charles, you watch the show.
No, I do not. I've never seen a freaking episode.
I thought you did. I thought you said you did.
No, I don't even want to give it a chance because it's CW and it looks so teen angsty. Oh God.
That sounds like some serious McFall backpedaling.
I've heard really good things about this and that it's very, very Twin Peaks and there's other nice things about it. But,
no, like, I did hear that. I did hear those reviews. Yes.
What I have seen of the previews and the commercials, there is nothing that leads me to believe that has to take place in Riverdale and the Archie gang. Like, you could have just given me an entire new an entire new cast, an entire new set of characters, and it probably would have done just as well. I don't understand the reason for making Archie.
Well, arguably it wouldn't have done because it wouldn't have had that hook.
It came out on Current Geek, I think it was. I heard that they said there's actually a comic book line in the early 2000s, maybe the early 10s or whatever, that did reimagine the whole Archie comic has this darker, more a supernatural world. And Sabrina the Teenage Witch was the same way. And apparently it did really well as a comic book run. That's what these shows are based off of. I don't know, man. I got to tell you, every commercial that they showed, I watch Supernatural. So I'm all up on my cheese on CW. And I watch The Flash and Arrow and all that. And they'll run their own commercials on the app. And it's just, there's nothing about the advertisements for CW that ever makes me want to turn on a second of it, you know?
I think you just have a big hang-up about, like, young romance and angst.
I do. Like, I do. Because not everybody, you know, not all superheroes have to be dark and dour. But not everybody with a pulse on TV has to be banging everybody else and be heartbroken over it every 5 minutes. Let me see somebody's head explode before you get in bed with somebody else, please.
No, and I mean, I agree, like, with Archie, like, I understand that, you know, it's such an idyllic version of
Riverdale
is so saccharine sweet. And I don't have a problem with saying, okay, well, teenagers in that day were probably dealing with a lot of the same issues that teenagers these days are dealing with. So can we ground this a little more in reality? But I don't necessarily need to see a noir Archie. Again, give me a different cast of characters. Like, there's
no reason for anybody to watch that show because there's already other shows that are like that.
That do the exact same thing.
What's
the
reason? Yeah, but then what about the people that are like, I don't give a shit about Archie. Why would you?
But that's the
whole hook. This show looks cool, but you put Archie in it. Can he be a natural redhead? I mean, could we do that at least?
neon orange.
Yeah, this neon orange.
No more hair appropriation.
with these grill lines just shaved into the side.
I don't understand what it is. But I don't know.
Grown men, y'all know a whole lot about this show.
You bring up CW, and I was just excited that the CW app is no longer showing previews for the week's show when you're watching
the backlog. Behind. Yes. Oh man, yes.
Because I'm just catching up on Arrow.
Right.
So I'm one behind the Crisis on Earth X, and I am so pissed off at what they're doing with Deathstroke. Like, I never thought I was going to be mad at what they would do with Deathstroke on this show.
I think I was watching that episode today. I think we'll have to talk about it in case people haven't seen it. We'll talk about it later. But yeah, if you haven't got nerdy enough, let me see that throne. Come on, Klotz. Hey, babe.
Throne.
There you go. Chris, I know this is all you, man. You stood in line. I think you stood in line. Maybe I'm mistaking you with, like, somebody I care about. I don't know. But somebody stood in line to meet Timothy Zahn. But no, I'm sorry, Chris. You love this character of Thrawn. Let me tell you, everybody, I am not as deep into the Star Wars lore that's off of the main screen as my co-hosts here. And I remember in the first season of this show, the first year, rather, of this show, Breaking the Panel, that him and Klot started talking about Thrawn. I'm like, are y'all saying a word wrong? I don't understand what you're doing. and they caught me up. I'm like, okay. Because I never had watched animated series and that stuff. Chris, in my mind, when I hear Thrawn, I hear Chris Wisdom, huge fan. There's some news coming out about this.
Yeah, so the sequel, it was Paul, his roommate Sean, and I at Dragon Con. We stood in line, waited for the okay. Thrawn panel.
So I didn't mistake you with somebody I cared about. I cared about you. You did it.
No, it's just a little headline. It's just they announced that the sequel to Timothy Zahn's Thrawn book, and this is called Alliances, which was also a title of one of his.
It was a Mara Jade book, wasn't it?
It was Mara Jade, but it was also the stormtroopers that were. I'm trying to think what they were. Polly, can you help?
No, I actually didn't read it.
Okay, so there were some stormtroopers that were questioning their allegiance to the Empire and kind of trying to do good work while in the white armor. And Mara, I believe, was tasked at that point as the hand of the Emperor to find and neutralize these guys. And then she found them and they came to an understanding that, well, maybe the Empire's not all that great, if I remember correctly. So so it's cool that it's got that title, but...
Wait, are you sure you're not thinking of Allegiance?
Oh, but you're right. There you go. Allegiance is what I'm thinking of. Sorry. You're good.
Okay.
Good call.
Yeah.
There is June 26, 2018 is when the book drops. And there is Vader on the cover, and that makes me excited because we did not get to see a lot of any really substantial Vader Thrawn interaction. And EU Thrawn respected Vader's power, but didn't respect Vader. And when I say respected his power, respected what the power that he had in the Force, but didn't really respect Vader. He saw him more of a lapdog for the Emperor and did not really have a good command mind. This new Vader that we've been seeing in Marvel Comics since they relaunched the Star Wars books in Marvel, a lot of Imperial intrigue and politics going on in that book, as well as off the books missions that he runs. And I want to see these two meet. So.
That sounds cool. And that's, do you know when that's coming out?
June 26, 2018.
Now, let me...
Already has it pre-ordered at Barnes & Noble.
Oh, yeah. Walden Books. Let me ask you this. Do we think we'll ever... Because we know after the end of the trilogy, which is 2020, I think, the end of the Skywalker trilogy of trilogies, if you will, the saga, the Skywalker saga, they're going to be... Disney has announced that they're going to go on and do more Star Wars films and other parts of the universe. Do you think we might actually get a Thrawn story?
We're getting the Thrawn story in Rebels. I don't know that we'll get a big screen adaptation. I would love it.
Who would you cast?
Idris.
Come on, really?
He casts Idris for everybody. Crazy. Yeah. That's what he does.
The first time I. The Big C? I think that's the first time I remember seeing Idris Elba. I was like, that dude would make a cool Thrawn.
So, okay.
I like the voice.
Yeah, if you didn't know, Chris Wisdom is down with Idris Elba playing any part.
Yeah.
They could just do like a Eddie Murphy type thing with him.
Yeah. how saved would the Justice League have been?
Melissa McCarthy as Wonder Woman.
Why? Wonder Woman. Every time. Why are we making that a bit?
Because it is Charles, a little bit of a bit. I like Melissa McCarthy. I find her highly entertaining and a beautiful woman, and I like what she does. Is what I do.
All right, man. I'm jazzed as anybody else for a brand new Thrawn book, because Thrawn has always been in my top of favorite expanded universe stuff. And like Chris, I've read all the other Zahn books that feature him and don't feature him, but are somewhat related to him and his legacy. But the new canon story they have for him going forward, that he's a Chiss exile, you know, now raised in the Empire, you know, working his way up through the ranks in the span of maybe a couple of years, all the way to Grand Admiral, which is obscene and unheard of even for an alien. But his interactions with Darth Vader, that's something to see. And something that we really haven't seen much of in previous materials, because he debuted after Vader was already dead.
He debuted after, and I was thinking there was there was one of the later books that I thought there, did he not
talk you mean about Outbound, an Outbound Flight?
It might or... have been Outbound Flight. No, because that would have been Anakin and Obi-Wan.
Yeah, and he still wouldn't have met them.
I thought there was an interaction that he had mentioned that he, it might have even been in the trilogy, that he had mentioned something about meeting Vader once and not being impressed.
You're definitely right, but we've never seen it. It's never been written from the narrative perspective where it's happening
right where it's happening
in front of us.
Yeah.
Which is should be great. Bring back Pelion. That's what we want, though.
That's yeah, absolutely. that's my big ask for the next book, is that's who I want.
Yep.
Oh, well, there you go. Now, this one feels like a Paul Klotz, but, you know, I'm kind of wrong on some of these things. But we talked a little, not last episode, I don't think, but it could have been last episode, but recently we talked about Disney and Fox and their on-again, off-again relationship, and we got another blip, I believe, from Variety today that they've gone dark. Like, they were talking hot and heavy, and now both sides have gone dark, which means any second now we could hear something. I don't know. What do we got here?
Wrong again, Charles. It was Chris Wisdom.
Well, so that was the first story that came out a couple of weeks ago, and that was why the story came out, and people were instantaneously saying, and we covered it, you know, the saying talks,
yeah,
it was off. But our point was, no, that's not what any of this says. It just says they're not talking now. We don't know what that means. They could be going back to their corners and figuring out the next bargaining, the next bargaining position. This seems to lend to the fact that because of that news, you saw a stock jump, not as big in Disney, and I can only assume that's because it takes so much more to move Disney stock up. But yeah. Fox was that four points up, based on that news. They saw that within the next few days, they saw like a four point bump in their stock, in their shares.
That's a pretty decent bump.
People were definitely excited, and so this is just more talk of, you know, backroom chatter, basically, of there's still opportunities out there, and it's talks are not dead.
Good.
So Frank Allen and the guys from Toy Power were talking about it on their personal pages. And I said, as excited as I am for the prospect of the X-Men possibly entering the MCU at this point, if the MCU was able to just help guide the X-Men universe the same way that they're doing with Spider-Man, I would be happy with that, and possibly have them in parallel universes and then have crossover somehow, some way. I'm fine with that, but not necessarily a wholesale merger. I just really hope that if the Disney sale happens, that I just get Fox fanfare in front of my Lucasfilm logo. That's, to me, that is the most important thing out of this entire possibility, because it is hard for me to watch Star Wars movies and get into them because I can't start
Yeah, man. I want Marvel's first family. That's all I really want. Because I'm with some of the concerns. They being Fox, knocked it out of the park with Logan, knocked it out of the park with Deadpool. We know that Disney's not going to do that with those properties. And they're not going to go the R rating. They've made it very clear with Marvel that they're going to toe certain lines.
Do we know that, though?
Things change. Okay, things do change.
We've got the Netflix shows.
Yeah, but they're not. They're not like Daredevil. I mean, I'm sorry. Punisher, they're not Deadpool.
Punisher is hard R, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, I don't know. Maybe I haven't watched enough of it.
There's an eye gouging. Okay,
I haven't got that far. I guess.
Oh, maybe. Spoilers.
Well, and I think there's.
I don't know whose eyes.
That's another built-in benefit of buying Fox, because then that gives you the opportunity to put those more adult movies or takes on superheroes.
Yeah, make it the Disney After Dark branch or something.
Yeah, you can absolutely put that with the Fox brand, because it wouldn't be much different than when Disney first bought Miramax, because Miramax did not only indie flicks, but their more adult stuff. Were they owned by Disney? Yes, but they weren't closely affiliated and branded as Disney, so they were able to do that.
Mm-hmm. It's one thing to have the money all coming in the same coffers. It's another thing to like they wouldn't like take Fox and necessarily and then slap the Marvel Studios logo on top of all of it.
Well, they already do that.
Yeah, they already do that.
Well, you know what I mean, though.
Yeah, no, I get you.
Who knows, though? I definitely think if a buyout or a merger ends up happening, I don't think that we see the X-verse stuff or even the First Family start creeping into MCU until we reach the Next Generation. So I think through the end of this, you know, this current phase and everything, and the capstone to the original story, if you will, then maybe later we open the door to, if it happens in the future after Infinity War 2, and, you know, with the universe that's going to be anchored on Spider-Man and some of these other characters, like Captain Marvel and such. So there's a distinct possibility that those things could be woven back in then.
Yeah.
But right now it would be rough.
Well, and I did see an article with a quote from Feige, and I wasn't sure. I didn't get the whole context of where he gave the quote, so I don't know how flippant the response was and how long ago the quote was from. But, you know, he was talking about how there's 22 movies in the MCU now, and once you get to Phase 4, there's another 20 movies in after Phase 4.
Yeah, I saw that quote. Planned. Yeah. Now, I want to take I want to address that, what Claude said, be rough. What they bought Spider-Man when that went through, they were already, I would say, they were in production. I'm not even going to put a number on it, but they were in production.
It gave us the belief that anything could be possible.
Well, that's true. That's true. But they were already working on Civil War, and they changed up their whole movie release schedule, including killing the Inhumans movie because of the Spider-Man deal, and then Spider-Man made it into Civil War.
Wait, do we know that they killed the Inhumans thing because of Spider-Man?
They probably killed Inhumans because it was, I mean, like a sick dog.
Well, I'm saying things got moved ready from to die. From the outside. Well, they mishandled the whole thing.
Yeah, I don't think bringing
Spider-Man... Your brain ninjutsu is not working on me today, Klotz. I still want to make my point.
Well, I mean, sure, you're welcome to be wrong.
My point is not that Inhumans got canceled because of Spider-Man. My point is they had announced, here is our release schedule for the next 5 years. And then, boom, oh, wait, we got Spider-Man. They bumped things around, but they were already working on Civil War. And, yes, they had some inside knowledge, and we can only take it at face value, but I honestly have a hard time believing that the writer said, no, we'd always written for Spider-Man, you know, but I was like, then what? If the deal doesn't go through, what? You have to redo the whole movie? I don't think you always wrote for Spider-Man, but Spider-Man made it in. My point is,
that movie can still be done without Spider-Man.
I know it could, but I'm saying this is how they set it up. My point is, they could buy Fox now, and we already know Infinity War is going to be two parts. Fantastic Four can show up easily in the second part of Infinity War. And that's where they, in my opinion, where they should show up, because it's universal.
I just don't think that's what would happen.
Would you have said the same for Spider-Man before they bought Spider-Man? Spider-Man?
Wait, what?
Would you have said the same? Because we were recording the show. I can't remember. I'm not going to go back to the archives. But we were recording before they did Civil War. And we covered the whole Sony issues and the possible buyout, just like we're covering this now. Would you have said the same for Spider-Man?
No.
Spider-Man? Did you say it without the hyphen? Spider-Man. Like, what?
Only after I've said it like 20 times, I'm like, I'm done with the hyphen. I'm going to shorten this thing up.
You can't be done with the hyphen. It's Spider-Man. He's not Peter Spider-Man.
Spider-Man. He's a nice young boy in the neighborhood.
He's a nice young Jewish boy growing up in Forest Hills.
Spider-Man was woven into the narrative at the right moment. It was woven in midstream, not at the end. So, like, we know Infinity War is done. So if there was an opportunity to sneak Fantastic Four in, it would have been somewhere before Infinity War or in Infinity War.
Well, they snuck the Watchers in.
But they didn't really sneak the Watchers in, because the only thing that Fox had...
What does that have to do with anything?
They're like a huge Fantastic Four property.
They are. I like you, Casey.
Uatu is,
I like you a whole lot, Casey.
That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about adding a major team of four characters into the narrative that already has like three dozen characters. They've already got their backup characters in the... we saw it in the... We'll talk about the trailer a little later, but we saw it in the Infinity War trailer today that just came out. Guardians of the Galaxy are sitting in the wings waiting to come in. You know, we've got the cosmic level stuff on hold. There's no room for them.
I disagree. I think there is. And, you know, even if it's a stinger, even if it's like Adam Warlock is in the stinger of...
Well,
of,
if they do a stinger, then they're setting up for the future. They're not going to...
Still, I mean, I'm just saying.
Are you saying that you want, like, okay, in the second Infinity War film, at the culmination of all
the 11th hour, Thanos, they just show up.
And then a big rock dude and an invisible, like, all these ridiculous people just show up all of a sudden and start fighting too?
No, yeah, Charles does not like big rock dudes in the MCU. He's not a fan.
No.
They treated him wrong! Rock appropriation is never okay!
Oh, boy.
I just don't think there's. I don't think at this point there's room in the narrative.
He's got the reality gem. All of a sudden, you know, the Fantastic Four had been erased from all of Marvel history, and then whatever happens with the reality gem in the movie, there they are. Oh crap, we remember them now, and you know, I think it can be done. I do. They've done crazier things with less. That's all I'm saying. And on that note,
I disagree. I don't think they've done anything like
Listen,
that.
Listen, I've heard a couple of really great pitches to bring the Fantastic Four into the MCU. I don't know if any of them can really take off, but I'm also just really attached to it being a period piece that's tied into Ant-Man, that the Fantastic Four were adventurers in the 60s.
That I could see.
And that's it? You don't bring them into the future? Like, maybe you could tease it that they get lost in space, so you could, you know, you have it open-ended where you could bring them back later, but, you know, no concrete plans, for sure.
I am solidly for threading the needle that you're going to use to weave together the story later after we finish Infinity War. So basically, after RDJ and Evans and everybody else, their contracts all run out, and those characters as we know them right now are all gone from the MCU, we've got a fresh palette with Spider-Man and a couple other holdovers. Then you, if you want to throw them into the mix and start telling new stories with them being a key element, I'm with you 100%. It can be done. It just can't be done right now. We're ramping up for the final match.
We've got all the players already in place. Anybody who's going to be is there.
No, that's not true. Ms. Marvel is making her appearance, and she has not shown up at all or even been mentioned in passing in any of the movies. And I have she is in the movie.
But yeah, no Pip the Troll.
All right.
No Moon Dragon.
So, Klaus says no. I say yes. We'll see how it plays out. I won't remember this conversation when it happens anyway, so it doesn't really matter. We're going to take a break here, get some more beers on track, and we're going to come back with some more awesome sauce after this. And we're back, and I want to jump right in with one of my favorite parts of any show that I do, and that is the listener feedback. We've got a new iTunes reviews, guys, and I went and checked just to make sure we hadn't missed anything. This would be a 10-star review if they could leave 10 stars for us. From a woman who almost threw a chair at them twice. This is by KAMCS from USA. These guys picked up Deadpool, I didn't, and saw it 7 times in the theater. To be fair, I saw the B. Arthur nod, and they didn't. Seriously, a great show. Positive hosts with different backgrounds to talk about different points of view. It's nice to hear from true believers and filthy casuals all in one podcast. Muchas gracias is the way it's written. So there is our review from what is becoming one of our most interactive fans. The nice lady we met at Dragon Con that I don't think I actually got to talk to her face-to-face. I don't know her name. But she was very interactive in the Dragon Con panel, and thank you for leaving that iTunes review. Very much appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks.
I think we're going to have to, for next Dragon Con, that was very heartfelt, Cod. Thank you for throwing that in. I think for the next Dragon Con, we're going to have to get little plush chairs to throw back out at the audience to make this thing a thing. The Oz Comic Con will no longer hold annual convention in Adelaide or Perth from 2018 onwards. And the team behind the cons said, our Perth and Adelaide fans are some of our most passionate fans in Australia. You're what makes the event so fun. However, recently we have felt the events have not reached the high standards that we aspire to, nor the expectations that you have. It is within this mind that we have made the decision to no longer deliver the Oz Comic Con in Perth and Adelaide. So that's, I mean, I think, I don't know what quality they may have dropped to, because I mean, there's something to be said about businesses and holding a standard, but at the same time, this feels like it's a huge blow to the con circuit in Australia. I just really wanted to cover that for our other nationality fans, especially there are people in Australia who have to deal with this. Of course, they keep using Melissa Joan Hart throughout the entire article. I don't know, but like the video at the top is like, meet Melissa Joan Hart. And there
maybe that's the problem.
As a comic book fan in Kansas, I cannot find a violin small enough to play for Australians and their loss of the Oz Con. Get out of here. You got no right to that. That's
okay, now that's not fair. That's not fair. Oz, they have like a strip of land to live on in an entire country. You're in godforsaken no man's land that nobody wants to go to anyway.
Yeah. Oz is ours. We keep Oz. We keep Oz. That's ours. If they want to spell it A-U-S, Oz, that's fine. But O-Z, nope.
Chris, you don't understand. They weren't in Kansas anymore. Okay.
Throw that to the people in Wamigo. Nice. And
also,
to throw out to our Australian fans earlier, I almost jumped on Casey for saying it. Because I learned something earlier today, that hyperbole is not hyperbole in Australia. It is Hyperball, and I think that's ridiculous, Frank.
Dude! That does not make sense to me. That's like my favorite sport now.
Hyperball. I gotta say, on that note, Chris, you did a phenomenal job guesting on at Toy Power recently. I mean, I know you guessed it a while back, but it got released recently, and I was listening to it, and you represented well, man. It was fun.
Oh, thank you. Which one did you listen to?
The Justice League.
The Justice League one, yeah. That was good. That was fun. Those guys are awesome. They
you've been on more than one.
What's that? Yeah? There was they also did their Thor. They did their Thor. Their Ragnarok review.
And you were on with that?
Uh-huh.
Man, new breaking news. Toy Power is no longer a part of Giant Size Team Up.
No!
You can't have him on more than me. That's and you haven't even asked Klotz. So, you know, you're fired. I'm just saying. Sorry.
Those guys, if you get a chance to be on the show, those guys are awesome.
Yeah.
Gracious hosts. They make you feel welcome. They service all levels of knowledge on the subject, as can see when you compare my episode to Charles. Just episodes to Charles's one, but
I love that we're like equating Charles to like the filler episode of a TV show. It's like, it's a Charles episode. All right, let's skip to the next one.
No, I bring
entertainment.
Filler episode. I would say Charles is more like the third episode of a Kamehameha power up in Dragon Ball Z.
Oh, wow.
I think is what we would go and equate that to.
Okay.
I don't even get that reference. I mean,
Charles is like when they shoehorn in a celebrity appearance who's like a B-level celebrity.
P-level.
They're really awkward because they're like out of their normal. Like when they try to take like a comedian and put them on a serious show and they make a bad joke or, you know, vice versa. So, yeah, no, that's what it's like. Because I've listened to that before on other shows.
As of now, my episode's been more highly downloaded than Chris's. I'm just saying.
Okay. Well, yes, you recorded your episode before Chris's episode.
That's not the point. Just like we saw the non-Japanese guy in The Office, my episode has been downloaded more. I'm just saying. That's the point. All right. You have been waiting. And before we get off of the Australian topic, Frank and Mrs. Allen or Darren or anybody, Ben, any of you guys want to record your thoughts and what Oz Comic Con meant to you and what it's going to do. Maybe you don't care. Maybe you're like, nope, it was kind of getting crap. It's good. That's gone. Or maybe you're like, man, this is sad. We're losing it. We just want to know from the locals what the impact is for you there. So definitely like to hear that. Now, outshining the entirety of Giant Size Team Up, the Blazing Defender could sneeze on a snare drum, and as long as it sounded like he said something about comics, a million people are going to like and comment and post. Because we put out our thoughts, well, we, I guess being Chris, we put out our thoughts about the Infinity War trailer dropping, right? We shared it. We beat everybody to the punch. Beat everybody in our network to the punch.
You sure did.
Yeah, good on us, because 2 hours later, Travis dropped his thoughts on the trailer. Nothing. We're getting tumbleweeds and wind blowing through our Facebook page while Travis's stuff just keeps popping up all day. So good on you, Travis, for that. But we all saw the Infinity trailer today. Who wants to go first?
Well, first of all, I just want it to be noted that it's not necessarily Travis, but he has got one hell of a hype man in Debo.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah,
he does. That and good on him for that. Yeah. And you know, Casey being on this show, I think he still likes Travis's post better.
I mean, listen, you can't make me choose sides between a big man who probably eats the amount of protein I have in my entire body in the course of a single meal versus you guys.
Say that like we all don't collectively eat the amount of protein.
I mean, I don't know, man. He's a big dude. It's like hanging out with Hulk Hogan, I'll tell you.
You know what's funny, though? He's not as big as you think he is.
He's not that big.
What, really?
Yeah.
No.
Aw.
I mean, he's solid, but you know.
He's got a Wolverine thing going on.
Oh, yeah. You guys are ruining it. I'm imagining he's like a real-life Captain America. Like,
I think that's the tiniest thing I've ever seen.
But
you heard it here. Blazing Defender report skips leg day.
Yeah, and he wears Spider-Man under ruse, which is awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I wear Spider-Man under ruse, so what's the...
Well, I hope to not see yours. I'd like to leave that box unchecked.
Oh, no, that's becoming a DragonCon tradition, is Klaus gets to see somebody's underwear every year.
Mm. Yeah. Mark your calendars, folks.
Yeah. I will go ahead and jump in, because I, as much as Chris refuses to listen and says, you don't listen to most trailers, I'll watch the first trailer. This is the first trailer.
Well, you heard it here, folks. He's never watching another. He's never watching another Infinity War trailer ever.
Not on purpose. The next
one. This is just a teaser. You have to watch the first trailer when it comes
out.
No,
Paul. This is the first one. He won't watch
this
it at
is,
all.
This
ever.
Is the first for me. This is the first one.
He goes
one.
Into
it's
theaters whenever they show it, covers his ears and his eyes and says, la, la, la,
well, no,
la,
no, okay.
la, 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 la,
la. See, I do get forced into watching some trailers now that I'm actually going to the movies on a regular basis. But before I was going to the movies on a regular basis, no, I will skip the Facebook posts. I will skip the YouTube videos. I don't want to see anything extra. You've got me hyped. I am ready to go see this film right freaking now. I'm
you
good.
Ready to see it without seeing a trailer?
Yeah, I was, but I got to see a little bit of trailer. It's like the first hit of crack is free, and then you got to pay for the rest. I mean, maybe that's just me.
This trailer could have been Captain America staring at me lovingly in the eyes for about a minute and a half, and I'd be like, yeah, I'm excited for Infinity War. I'm ready to go.
I found the style of the trailer very interesting, how they use the different voices of the characters just after they appeared on the screen. And
I thought you were going to say, yeah, it was interesting versus like a DC trailer where they showed me it's going to happen in the movie.
Hey, we got some that's going to happen. We got some punches. We got some action shots.
I got all I needed, Chris. That's all I'm going to say. I'm very happy. What about you, Chris? What did you think of the trailer?
That was one of the things that I loved about that trailer too, was the voiceover given Sam Jackson's line from Iron Man when he introduced himself at the end of that first Iron Man, and the concept of the team that they were going to build, and every character got a little voiceover of that. That was cool stuff. Just the little things in there, Black Panther telling somebody to get Captain America a shield.
Yeah, get this man a
get this man a shield.
Get Steve Rogers a shield. There was so much in there that I was already hyped, and I'm even more so hyped for the next trailer so that I can get hyped even more. Because it's like Cartman and his view of appetizers. This is the food you eat before you eat to make you more hungry.
The trailer did absolutely nothing for me. No, I'm just kidding. It got me as hyped up as a comic book fan will get.
Whoa.
Know your place, Casey.
We'll hear what I have to say, and then we'll hear how you hate it.
Okay, fine.
You gotta listen to the cues, man.
Read the room, Casey.
I'm just saying, I got a lot to say.
I you should stop.
We can go We can go with at least one episode without your negativity, Sheila.
Oh, jeez.
Sheila, for our Australian audience.
About to waltz that lovely.
This trailer was, a word I use occasionally, dope. Charles, I agree. I liked what they did with the voiceovers from the various characters. Kind of, gave you a sense of unity and everything. I mean, opening with Stark cradling somebody's assumingly lifeless body.
Yeah.
Clearly, visibly upset. That's pretty jarring and good, though. I mean, because it sets the emotional tone. Everybody looks great. We've got blonde Black Widow. We've got Nomad, basically.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if they're going to
better
go so
Nomad.
I don't know if they're going to go so far as to call him out as that, but I've seen some speculation. Arguably, it seems like the storyline is picking up where Steve and Bucky are in Wakanda after the events of Civil War. And so hopefully, because they show a battle line scene, which looks like it's fresh out of Gladiator or something, where they're all lined up.
Yeah.
And and Black Panther does this, like, it's so cool. Like, he just, like, puts his arms up like a vampire and then puts his claws out. And I was like, it's a little over the top, but I love it.
I wanted him to hiss. That would have sealed it for me.
That would have been so ridiculous. But yeah, no, like, everybody looks amazing. The early visual effects look great. Take a cue, DC.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Take a cue.
Get out of here with your Steppenwolf garbage.
Everybody looks great, including Thanos. He looks amazing. There's literally nothing that you could say bad about his visual effects. I mean, if you did, you'd be crazy.
2012.
If you did, you would be crazy.
I think Bert and Ernie have become roommates of Casey right now.
One of my favorite things, though, is the line from Thanos where he's like, you know, you don't usually think, I'm paraphrasing, I imagine, you don't usually think of fun when you're balancing the universe, but I'm quite enjoying this, as he puts a gem into the gauntlet.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The one was like, ripped from Vision's head.
Yeah.
It wasn't, though, because it was a different color.
A different color, yeah.
Yeah, everything's out of sequence in the trailer.
Was it? I thought it was that he pulled the blue one out of Vision's head, and isn't that what he put in the glove? He had the blue.
I thought Vision had the orange.
Vision's gem is yellow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or, oh, you're right. I'm mixing up. Now I'm mixing up the comic book ones.
Yes. The colors don't make any sense.
Yeah. Colors are all over the place. But yeah no. We got to see Spider-Man's new suit.
Yes, Iron Spider, right? Iron right?
So cool.
Yes.
And I like that it's different than comic Iron Spider. You know, it's got the traditional red and blue going on instead.
It's also got the light up eyes he currently has in the comics.
Yep. It looks really crazy. And then we see that he's throwing down with Thanos, which is a big deal. Like, come on, man. Like, you're
he's
the young
full,
buck.
He's a full Avenger now. He's big leagues.
You're the young buck on the squad, man. And you're throwing down with the champ. So, yeah, I'm excited to see where it all goes. It looks like it's going to have the emotional punchiness that we would hope for, as well as some really genuinely badass action. I'm really excited. And, you know, the thing is, we were talking about this recently. I forgot that it's coming out in, like, May. I thought it was coming out in the fall next year.
6 months, baby.
Yeah, so man.
We get Black Panther before this, and then we just jump right into it. And then after that is when we get Ant-Man and the Wasp. So next year, 3 Marvel movies, you know.
Yep.
So, well, but they're going to be bunched up.
Speaking of punchiness, I mean, in the first few seconds, we see we get some answers, some questions answered from that we all had at the Thor Ragnarok panel. I mean, we see what happened with the Tesseract.
Yeah,
we also get to see Bruce Banner again, who looks like he just, you know, fell through some buildings.
Yes, yeah, was going to
punched through by somebody.
Well, I was going to ask: are we supposed to? Because it is out of sequence, but are we supposed to assume that he landed in the
Sanctum Sanctorum?
Thank you, the Sanctum Sanctorum. Yeah,
I that's the way I read it.
That's kind of how I read it. Yeah,
that's also a very Infinity Gauntlet scene, because that's how it starts, with Surfer crashing Stranger's roof.
Yep. Depowered, which, well, I shouldn't say depowered, but beat the crap out of him, and that's how you would show that Hulk has had the crap.
Right, because he's now back.
He gets punched so hard he's a man again.
Yeah.
He got beat back into a man shape.
Well, that's kind of how they set it up, right, in Age of Ultron. Age of Ultron, where he just got punched enough in his head, they got knocked out, and...
But wasn't that Loki's? That's what I remember. It's Loki's scepter. That's what's poking in Vision's head. It's not anybody ripping anything out. That looked like Loki's. The Loki.
Yeah,
I think that's
sense.
Corvus Glaive's scythe.
Oh,
I think that's what it is.
Okay.
Yeah, because we got a glimpse. I saw somebody took a still out of the trailer.
Proxima?
It looks like Proxima. Mm-hmm. Which I think I was a little confused by the glowy trident thing that gets thrown around a little bit, but now I realize it's probably hers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
and
that's
Cap's
another thing.
Fighting her alone, which is super cool. At least maybe. I mean, he catches the thing.
Yeah, it's gonna be wild. I can't wait.
I can't
wait to see the Black Order. Even though Casey hates them,
I do hate them. I wrote an extremely long article about how much
I read it
some time ago.
I read it. I disagreed with most of it, but I read it.
Yeah.
Now
they're cannon fodder. That's all they are. Really. There's not much to them.
Well, I hope they deal with it the way I came across them, because I never read the comic books that they were actually in.
They're only really in one series, Charles, which is nice.
Okay.
I mean, all together, at least.
Well, I came across them in Marvel Avengers Alliance, and then again in some other Marvel games, and currently Future Fight. And they're really tough. They're really good characters in the games. So I'm hoping that the experience I had meeting these characters ends up on the screen as opposed to experience.
Who was the worst to fight in that game? Black Dwarf?
Yeah, probably. In the future fight, yeah. In Marvel Avengers, it was Proxima all night long. I mean, you could not. She was tough.
Big AOE.
Yeah. And she would change her class. So she was really tough in Marvel Avengers Alliance. But yeah, in Future Fight, it is a Black Dwarf, I do believe. He's one of the toughest.
All right. Well, my thoughts on this, I'm not in love with the spider armor. I'll tell you that much. That's probably just because I love the costume he has already so much. Like, it's perfect. Everything about the Homecoming Civil War Spider-Man outfit,
it was
is
good.
Perfect.
It was good.
And
yeah, but it's not for cosmic scale stuff.
I mean, I'm sorry. Captain America being in this film is practical for cosmic level stuff.
He's got a vibranium shield guy. Settle down. And he's got a rugged
shield. Well, actually, he doesn't. Otherwise, they wouldn't say to get this man a shield.
Yeah, so he gets a shield. Because
you don't know? All he's got are these panther gauntlets.
They don't just listen to the King of Wakanda now all of a sudden?
I don't know.
I'm staying.
He doesn't have one when he's charging forward. He's got two little like gauntlet things.
You don't know that he didn't just throw it? We just talked about his being out of sequence. Come on, kid.
Yeah, it could have been between throws. All right, fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough. Touche.
But get to your favorite part, Casey.
My favorite part, I like seeing how handsome Thanos is, which is weird. Like, he's like uncomfortably handsome.
Yeah, I believe you quoted his 40-inch pythons.
He's got 40-inch purple pythons. That's why he's wearing a tank top. I want more, like, you know, Chris will mention the fact that all my objections to how Thanos looks should have been dealt with in 2012. And he's not entirely wrong. I mean, he's not like Charles McFall wrong.
Oh!
Wow. But what we saw of him in, I'm going to start with Guardians, because that's really the first time we saw him in full.
Yeah.
You know, other than an over the shoulder.
Oh, your biggest problem with him, we saw enough of that to know in 2012 that it wasn't that way.
What, his eyes?
Yeah, his eyes.
Okay. His eyes. Well, it could have just been the lighting. I mean, it was dark. Who's to say back then?
Purple irises, guy. Come on.
We're going back 5 years ago, man. Anyway, Thanos is supposed to have solid black eyes with white irises. It makes him look really creepy, and I did a 10-second Photoshop mock-up of how that would look, and I think it looks way better than what they have. That being said, he needs to grin more. But other than that, I don't have too many complaints. I mean, I wish he had the helmet on the entire movie instead of, you know, Thanos going to the gym, BRB, got to get the Infinity Gems to blow up your world. But, you know, BRB. Like, I wanted a more like classic Thanos, like the way he is sitting in the chair. In Guardians, I thought his outfit looked fine in that.
Yeah,
eyes aside.
That part is a little weird where they're going, God, what was it? What was it after Infinity Gauntlet?
Infinity War?
Infinity War?
Was it War? It wasn't Crusade?
It's War and then Crusade.
War and then Crusade. So wasn't it War when we found... Yeah, so Infinity War when he's inside the Soul Gem, right? And he's wearing... That's basically his outfit, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I thought that was a little weird that's... how we're being presented then.
His main, what appears to be his main outfit. I read it. Yeah. There was an interview with somebody. I don't think it was Feige, but someone who said he starts the movie with his, like, you know, the armor we saw him in Guardians. Or even at the end of, was Guardians 2 the one that had the stinger of him grabbing the gauntlet where it's like,
that's
fine,
one.
I'll do it myself?
That's one.
No, that can't be one.
Are you sure? Because I'm pretty sure, because Ronan had the stone. And I'm pretty sure at the end of one, he opens up the safe, reaches in for the gauntlet.
Is it one? What's the stinger from two?
Adam Warlock.
Oh, you're right. Okay, so the stinger from Guardians 1.
Wait,
thank you, Charles.
Mark it down. The new kid
Charles was right about something. November 29th, 2017.
I'll take it.
Yeah, take it to the bank, my friend. but...
I'm sorry. I'm on Facebook right now. This is related. It's relevant.
Okay.
Somebody took the big dude from Friday, the really jacked one.
Zeus.
Yeah, Sonny was
colored in purple and and drew an infinity gauntlet.
Oh,
it says those my infinity gems. That's not wrong.
Share that to our page, man. Put that on our Facebook page if you can.
Yeah, we might make a little collection of some of the best memes to come out today.
Yeah, we got to meme it up.
Yeah.
But what am I? What else am I excited about with this trailer? A friend of mine said, you know, they kept pretty much the best thing out of Infinity, which is where you get the Thanos's four-armed henchmen and the Black Order. You get the Battle of Wakanda, which was a pretty big establishing point in the, you know, Black Panther comics history, where it's like they're almost like the Targaryens of Africa, where they're like unbent, unbroken, and unconquered. Mm-hmm. I don't is that the Targaryen saying? I don't remember. But basically, Wakanda's never lost like a battle ever. They're like the champs of defending their territory. So to have Thanos go, you know, all in and just invade his army and have Black Panther stand up against it, I think it's pretty cool. But yeah, it's nice having all your heroes under one roof. It's the truest of true crossover movies. Like Avengers set the bar where it's like we can have five heroes together in one film, but Infinity War is like, here's your crossover. Like this is an event movie. Everything else before is just a smattering of characters.
And this is the capstone. This is going to change everything, right?
And it's going to be sad to see Captain America go. But
this leads to Phase 4. So
right.
It's...
Yeah, I mean, this is for the world of Marvel that we know, Phase 1, 2, and 3, where it's all been building, but everything kind of adds more, and together, this is the capstone. This is going to end all of that. And we are going to lose one way or the other. You know, we're presuming some death, but some story. We're going forward with new characters for the most part, like you guys said earlier in this conversation. We'll probably keep Ant-Man. We're going to keep Spider-Man. I don't know. What do you think? Is Thor going to make it through into more movies after this?
No. His contract's up.
He's out. So, yeah, we're going to lose Thor. Cap has been back and forth, right? Chris Evans.
He's out, too.
He's out, too. And Downey's out. The big three are out.
Yeah.
Downey, Johansson, Evans, and Hemsworth are all out, from my understanding.
The Avengers as we know them, basically.
Yeah, basically that first generation of Avengers are all going to be... Oh, and Ruffalo's out, too. I could be wrong on Hemsworth, because I don't... Now that I think about it, I don't think I saw him mentioned specifically, but I'd have to think that he'd be out at the same time.
Yeah, if the other five are out.
Yeah, but there's also... Maybe he, after Ragnarok, is maybe having more fun in the role than he's had in a while.
Maybe. I mean,
and there might be more momentum there, too. Like, you know.
And don't forget, he's doing great work in movies like The Huntsman.
Ugh.
Yeah, I know, right?
Look, I just guess we're not getting that Black Widow movie, which is kind of upsetting, because I know a lot of people were really looking forward to it. I wasn't,
but Marvel. I think it'd be good. I think you do a spy thriller, like a James Bond type spy thriller with her.
I think it's just too late for it.
I just don't think she's on her own, she's an interesting enough character to carry a movie. But then I could have said that about a couple other Avengers. Like, I wouldn't want a Hawkeye movie either.
I
wouldn't even really want an Ant-Man movie, but I was very satisfied with what we got. So
KC hates women and doesn't think they're important.
Yep.
Well, prior to 2008, I really didn't want an Iron Man movie. So 2008.
Yeah, Iron Man was not in a good place. He was really kind of a dick at the time. But you know what? Give me a She-Hulk movie, man. I'll be there with bells on.
That'd be cool.
No, you get a Carnage movie.
No.
You get a Carnage movie.
Venom versus Carnage.
And he's going to fight the Submariner.
Oh, no. Well, maybe the movie ends with them both dying, you know? Then that would be a real treat.
Happy ending for Casey.
The first thing I would ever do if I wrote for Marvel Comics would be to kill the Submariner.
He's already he'd been killed. You bought 12 issues of that, did you?
I know, but you know how these people come back. I figure by the time I finally embark on a career.
Whoa, Casey. Whoa.
What?
What do you mean these people?
Good Lord.
What?
Buddy.
I mean, you know, Atlanteans. I'm sorry.
Casey is just padding his resume to become the next editor-in-chief for Marvel. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Yeah, my name is Roman Atlantis. I was born and raised under the ocean.
Under the sea.
And I'd really like to write some ethnically charged Submariner comics.
where Submariner is a redhead with a strong Scottish brogue.
Oh, God.
I'm excited, man. I am excited. I'm ready to go see this film now. I am going to do my best to avoid seeing trailers for it from here on out. I know as soon as they drop, you guys
are going to do your best. Now you're going to do your best.
I go to the movies now. I have this membership that lets me go to anything I want to see for nothing.
Charles, your positions are so pliable, Charles.
Yeah, and also, you can't count the teaser as the first trailer. I know you've watched first trailers. Meaning, whatever, you watch the teaser and then the next trailer.
Sometimes I'll watch the teaser next year, but I got enough out of this teaser that I'm happy. I don't need to know more structure. I'm in. Stop selling me. I'm in. Just speed up. Drop it at Christmas, man. Why we got to wait till March or May or whatever you said we had to wait till? Why we got to wait till spring? Drop it at Christmas. Screw Star Wars.
Because Star Wars is taking...
Screw Star Wars. They don't have a Hulk.
Are you guys more jazzed about Infinity War or Star Wars 8?
Infinity War.
Easy? Is that like a no question?
For me, that's a no question. I don't need to see Empire Strikes Back Part 2. I mean, I'm going to. It's going to be interesting. But
shots fired, Star Wars fans.
I like Star Wars, but literally every trailer I see about The Last Jedi, for the most part, just rings like Empire Strikes Back for me.
How? Okay.
It's a dark middle movie. Allegiances are perhaps changing.
The first movie was dark. Like, this trilogy is going to be dark, I think.
I didn't feel like the first movie. I felt like the first movie felt like A New Hope. I mean, I agree with you. I enjoyed it.
The first movie was super dark. It was insanely dark.
Just it's not like they just killed the major character died. Or anything.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know.
I want to enjoy it. Don't get me wrong. I'm not hating on it. I'm just saying I am hands down more hyped for Infinity War than Star Wars.
I'm not hating on it, but I'm hating on it, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, don't make me choose between my kids, Casey.
Dark Superman for life.
No, I love all my choice children. Here. Yeah, no Sophie choice.
What about you, Casey? What are you more hyped for?
I'll be honest. It's Infinity War. I gotta level with you. Like, Star Wars is Star Wars, and it'll always be around. But I've been waiting for this since I was 10, really, when X-Men on screen legitimized comic book movies for me.
I need to find new people to do a show with.
Dude, you just said you didn't want to choose.
But you guys chose. That's the problem.
So you choose.
I don't want to choose. I want them both. I'm greedy.
You're going to get them both.
You will get them both, but listen.
Dude.
If you had the choice, both of these films are finished. If you had one in your lap tomorrow.
Like, if I could only watch one of them and I had to watch them tomorrow?
Yeah.
One or the other? Probably Star Wars.
Paul Klotz hates Marvel Comics.
I feel that, Casey. I feel that.
Yep. That's it.
I mean, if you give me the choice between the two, yeah, probably.
You're going to take a Star Wars.
I'm all about we're getting it all. And even if they dropped on the same weekend, I'd watch them both on the same weekend.
Well, yeah, that's the thing is I would cheat your rules and sneak into the other theater or something if I had to. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, the thing is, though, we've had 20 films in Marvel right now. And I'm good with almost all of them. I mean, some of them are a little subpar, but like...
In Iron Man 2, not doing anybody any favors.
30-something years in Star Wars.
I don't have a problem with 2 and 3 for Iron Man. Everybody has this huge chip on their shoulder about the second and the third Iron Man film, and I don't get it, but it is.
They're all right. They're just like the first one is just so awesome and groundbreaking that it's weird that his is the only one like with sequels that don't measure up.
I guess.
Yeah. I mean, the Cap sequels just get better and better.
I mean, I kind of think, honestly, that the first one, I mean, I don't know. The first Iron Man, I'm 50-50 on. The first half of it is great, I think, and the second half of it was kind of whatever for me.
I think the first Iron Man was different because it managed to make an origin movie that was not...
Painful to watch.
I don't want to say origin movies are boring, but they are less exciting than once the character's established. And Iron Man did a good job of breaking that mold.
Yes. I do agree with that. But yeah, I mean, we don't get a new Star Wars that often. Maybe yeah, that'll change now that they're planning to pump them out. Like, you know, they're going.
We're getting one every year now.
Yeah. I mean, in the past 20 years, we'll have you know, six.
Scarcity doesn't make them good. I mean, I'm not saying the new ones aren't good. I liked Force
exactly
Awakens.
Like that's what you're saying.
I liked the Force Awakens. Now, it's just because your panties are in a bunch doesn't mean I actually said they were bad. I like The Force Awakens, but every time I see a trailer for The Last Jedi, it just rings a hell of a lot like Empire Strikes Back. Just maybe it'll be different. Maybe. I don't care if it's word for word Empire Strikes Back, just with new faces. I'm going to enjoy it. But you could argue we didn't, you know, after the first three, you know, 4, 5, and 6, we didn't get anything for a while. And then what we got, just because of scarcity in years, didn't make it great.
That's because we got quite a bit.
We got Jar Jar. What do you
call the extended universe?
Well, yeah. You want to bring that in? You want to bring that in? Well, we've had 20.
And important that was.
Yeah.
Because Disney said it didn't count. And I wish they had lied when they said that.
Why do you inflame me, Charles?
Because Disney was stupid when they said that. Because I agree with you.
I'm going to take the risk of being wrong publicly, which I often am. I'm going to call your bluff here and say that it will not be like Empire and that it will be a wildly different film.
That'd be awesome.
It'll be just like Jedi because they've already got Ewoks and Porgs.
Ooh, Phil, you heard that. Phil on Botch podcast on the Giant Size Team Up Network. Casey's got fighting words about your new friends.
But yeah, I'm calling it now. I think it'll be a wildly different story. I think this next Star Wars film, if it's anything like the trailer is suggesting, it's going to be wildly surprising.
It could
and
be.
If it's not, I'm going to be sorely disappointed. I'm going to lose a lot of faith.
Yeah, I mean,
because the first one played it too safe.
I think so. Yeah, I don't. Yeah, and it's hard to say too safe. They played it safe because they had the prequels in the rear view is the problem.
If
the prequels had not existed, then I would say it was too safe, but I think they did what they had to do.
Like Charles, I enjoyed episode 7, but I do absolutely feel like they followed the template of A New Hope, and that was a mistake. It needed to be a bit different as a film. Hopefully they don't make that mistake twice, basically. I think they got that feedback too, to be honest. Like I think they would have to be stupid to ignore that everybody was like, episode 5 again.
Yeah.
But
at the same time, we know media marketing. I mean, the trailers can be wildly different than the movie. But so the trailer I have seen, I was forced to watch the newest one because I went and saw Thor and Justice League and all that jazz.
You could just close your eyes, man.
I didn't say I'm a scaredy baby who throws a temper tantrum. I just try to avoid seeing the trailers. That's all. But, you know, okay, so in the freaking marketing, we've got the new young Jedi off training somewhere. That's Luke on Dagobah. We have got the dark side calling because we see Kylo Ren, well, presumably sticking his hand out to Rey at the end of that trailer. And that's, you know, Darth Vader trying to get Luke to come to his side. We see the freaking AT-ST walkers facing off. We see the Porgs and the Ewoks. We see, you know, they're just all the marketing. It's just like, in my mind, I'm trying to say this is a great new film. We see the freaking Millennium Falcon flying through all kind of stuff, escaping a tight space. That's all Empire Strikes Back.
Well, Charles,
we see ice everywhere. Come on.
You just named a number of things that define Star Wars. Have to be walkers. The Millennium Falcon has to be definitely getting out of danger, but just barely. I mean, come on, man.
There are walkers
in Rogue One.
I love walkers, don't get me wrong. But why does the Millennium Falcon have to be definitely getting out of danger? Why is that a definition of Star Wars universe?
Because that's what the Millennium Falcon does.
So they're the Dukes of Hazzard of the Star Wars universe.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, have you seen the captain?
It's literally the
not anymore.
Ooh.
Sorry, too soon.
I'm sure Rey will carry on his flyboy legacy. Like, just imagine her saying, "Never tell me the odds." Oh, I'm all about it.
And that's the thing too, is like if you understand that Rey is the Luke analog in your breakdown,
Right.
And you should definitely see the character differences between her and Luke, because Luke wholesale bought into the myth of the Jedi as delivered to him by Yoda and Ben and never questioned. Like, he questioned, is the dark side stronger, and accepted the truth. No, it's just easier.
But it Rey, is stronger. I mean,
in this trailer, Rey is very much saying, hey, something has awoken in me that's been there since I was born, and I'm scared, and I need somebody to help me.
I just want to remix that trailer with the song, I Want to Know What Love Is, and I want you to show me playing in the background, see how it changes. It's just, yeah. I
don't know. It's going to be weird if she ends up being Kylo Ren's brother.
No, yeah, that would be very weird.
Yeah, no, that, yeah. And
but it would be true to Star Wars.
Yeah, well, it would be. But that's that. See, I wouldn't even
for count her to be his brother.
His brother? Yeah, exactly.
No.
You said it wrong, Casey. I know what you meant. But no, when I see them, and I know, Casey, Chris, there's some of the extended universe that I did read. And please, I know I'm wrong all the time, but I know, if I remember correctly, Han and Leia had twins who were super strong Jedis. When I see those two, period, even in the first film, in The Force Awakens, I'm like, those are the twins. Do we think that they're actually twins, or is there something else going to be going on there?
Well, he's definitely way older than she is. Mm-hmm. So, but I would, yeah, I mean, I would love for them to face off again in a very, you know, Jass and Jaina Solo kind of way.
Okay. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting. Now that we've pissed off everybody in the entire world.
Well, no, see, okay, so my thought is, from that trailer, it almost seems like they somehow ally with each other.
It does seem that way, I agree.
So I wonder what's going to happen that's going to cause that to happen. And so that's the interesting part. And the other thing is, people have pointed, like, people have all these theories. There's a theory that maybe Luke ends up acting against them in some capacity too, because Luke is in the Vader position in the trailer, the official trailer, or not trailer, I'm sorry, poster.
That line, I haven't seen the poster, but that line in the trailer about, I haven't seen raw power like this except for once. I wasn't scared enough then, but I am now. Like, dude, have you learned freaking nothing? Fear leads to the dark side, asshole. What do you mean you're terrified?
Well, we know that the Jedi mantras are largely bullshit. Yeah.
Ignorance of the dark side is what leads to the dark side.
Unless you're Sammy J. Then
only
it's
the
just
Sith
awesome.
Deal in absolutes, Charles.
Yep.
Yeah. Said by a Jedi, which is an absolute.
We're all aware. We're all aware.
And currently,
from my view, it's the Jedi Council that are wrong.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. From
the Jedi are evil.
Well, my
well, they're not evil, but they're wrong.
No.
All governments get corrupt at some
they're
point.
They're an ism, and you isms are always end up being bad for the health.
Yeah. The Jedi became a controlling system. But my favorite meme right now is Yoda on Luke's back, Dagobah, and they're playing that song. I can't do the lyrics just right because I don't have it in my head right now, but he's Yoda's mouth is moving, but you hear the song, hey, little girl, let me whisper in your ear. And I was like, oh, my God, that is so wrong. But it was perfect. All right, anything else, gents, before we knock this one out for the night?
Nah. We touched all the bases.
We did. We did indeed. Fun show. Casey, where can we find you other than breaking the panel?
Thursday nights on Twitch. That's it. No, I've abandoned everything. I've cut all previous ties.
I meant breaking the panel wasn't happening anymore, Casey, but you're good.
Oh, yeah, no. I'm cutting all previous and present ties, really. You can find me Thursday nights on twitch.tv/badcoyotefunky, where this week, although by the time this is up, it will probably be heard, but we're talking about Justice League again, because you can't get enough of talking about it at least three different times in your life. But yeah. Come check us out. We're a motley crew of people who aren't quite as old as the people I do this show with.
Paul Klotz, where can we find you?
You can find me here. I'm breaking the panel. You can find me on a show that'll probably never come out called Upside Down and Out, which is about Stranger Things. Casey and I are going to rekindle the flame of Panel by Panel. Very soon it should be out for the new year for sure.
In another show that'll probably never
yeah, another show that'll probably never see the light of day. And You can catch Casey, Chris, and myself guesting on Botched if you're a Patreon subscriber for them. So there's that.
It'll be a Christmas spectacular.
How fun was that?
That was a blast.
It was fun.
Yeah, I hated that I had to miss out on it, man. That,
yeah, I don't think I've ever hated another character in my party as much as I hated Casey's.
Yep. I had a wonderful time.
I hate you.
What about you, Chris? Did you make it through without getting kicked in the back?
Yes, I did, which is why I appreciated you not being there.
You're welcome,
yeah,
man.
Casey got the brunt of the nastiness.
Yeah, a little. But I lived to the end to tell the tale, or did I?
You'll have to
tune in and find out.
And Paul did what he perceived he had to do to survive.
Oh, no! That sounds horrible.
Oh, it's a mix of emotions and family betrayals from your favorite breaking the panelers. Panel breakers.
Awesome.
Breaky boys. I don't know what we're called.
Breaky boys. All right. Well, you can find more of me at charlesmcfall.com. I've got tons of stuff going on every day, and I am working on launching. Actually, we being the Giant Size Team Up crew, are working on launching a new game podcast and vlog and video cast and Twitch and everything that goes along with the gaming world, and that should be coming out very shortly. So stick around, have some fun. And we'd love to hear from you. If you'd like to email the show, btp@giantsizeteamup.com. And on the giantsizeteamup.com/breakingthepanel, you can go. There's a speak pipe there. You can leave a 90-second voicemail and from any device that has a microphone. So you don't even have to be in the United States with a cell phone. You just
Just lay down some speak pipe.
That is way too close to hitting the lock door button, man. We're just going to move on at this point. Check out all the awesome shows we mentioned at GiantSizeTeamUp.com with Toy Power, Breaking the Panel, Blazing the Fender, other stuff like that. I forgot now. I went down the rabbit hole and I shouldn't have. So,
Botched and DC On Screen.
Thank you, Casey.
You're welcome.
Tune in next week to hear...
Mr. President of the Network.
Tune in next week to hear Casey say...
You're a person on television. Nope. Screwed that up.
Breaking the Panel is the flagship podcast on the Giant Size Team Up Network. You can support the show at patreon.com/breakingthepanel, and you'll find more of our amazing podcasts at giantsizeteamup.com.